Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, as is traditional, it's time to look ahead to a brand new Premier League season. Joining me, as he has done for the last number of years, I'm delighted to welcome back from Second Captains, Ken Early. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm all right. How's your summer been?
Busy enough.
Yeah? World Cup mayhem?
World Cup was very good. So I've been back since then. Haven't got away yet, Andrew. Going to have to try and squeeze that in during the season somehow.
Maybe a long weekend during the international break, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, it's Ireland-Wales September 6th. That looks like a likely...
a good time to get away.
Yeah.
How did you enjoy the World Cup?
It was brilliant. It was better than I was expecting it to be. Because, you know, to be fair, the last few World Cups haven't been very good.
Mm.
And this just sort of started well, kept going, it was good right until the end. I don't know, what can I say? I mean, it's weird, like, because I was there for so long, and now I can kind of, it feels like so long ago. I mean, when we were there, you know, the third or fourth week, it was like, I can't remember my old life. All I do now is go around in Russia, going to football matches and, you know, trying to decipher signs in Cyrillic. And I don't remember who I am or what I used to do. And now it's kind of a bit like that now. I mean, maybe I've got dementia. Maybe it's some kind of early onset dementia.
At least we have a digital record of it.
Yeah.
You know, the start of your decline into dementia. That aside, has it given you, have you had enough time to recharge your football batteries? Because it doesn't feel like this summer has been much of a break between the end of last season and the start of this season, which is... coming up this weekend. I mean, it just seems to be upon us all of a sudden, even going through the nuts and bolts of preseason and all that kind of stuff. It has come around very quickly.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, once it starts, maybe. I mean, I was watching the Community Shield the other day and thinking, I'm not ready for this. And Chelsea seemed the same.
Does it feel like a lot of the clubs aren't necessarily ready for it? Because you look at Chelsea have just switched manager, Man United are doing whatever they're doing, Tottenham still haven't signed a player, they still haven't completed their stadium. Arsenal made a good start to the summer, but now there's all this stuff going on with Stan Kroenke and last minute transfer scrambling to try and get a defender in perhaps before the start of the season. Manchester City, you know, did what they did, Liverpool have done what they've done, but it does feel like there's, maybe it's to do with the transfer window closing this week as well. We're speaking on Wednesday before that happens, so just to put this conversation in that context, but it does feel like there's still an awful lot of stuff up in the air.
I don't know, I don't really understand why those things, like the season starting when it starts, which everybody's known for a long time, the transfer window closing when it closes, which everybody's known for a long time, why should this have been a problem to the clubs in terms of getting their shit together to be ready? I mean, the problem they can't get around is the fact that World Cup players who went to the last weekend, like all the England, Belgium, France and Croatia players, are only back this week. And I mean...
Well, I mean, the England players played for Manchester City. Walker and Stones played for Manchester City.
Yeah, so I guess they... I don't know, maybe they've... Because that's 3 weeks after... The World Cup final. I mean, they played the day before. I don't know. Did Stones? They must have stayed with the squad until the end.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not much of a break, is it? Just, you know, I mean, people talk about the physical aspect, but players are players are fitter these days, and it's not like they're going away during preseason and getting fat. But at the same time, for your own, even your own psychological benefit, to get away and switch off for a few weeks and then come back for the start of a new season has got to be important. So they haven't got much of a break.
Well, it could be that they, you know, are sort of into it. You know, I mean, I wouldn't expect them to have like lost a lot of fitness, or, you know, they might be keen to go. But I think they'll pay for it later in the season. You know, if you're not taking a break at this point, okay, then there must be a break scheduled. I mean, isn't it a legal requirement or a sort of contractual requirement that they have to have at least 3 weeks of uninterrupted break, which clearly couldn't have been the case for England's Manchester City players who played in the Community Shield.
Yeah.
You know, so they must have factored in, okay, Stones is going to be going to, you know, San Lucia or wherever in November, kind of thing. Or maybe there's going to be a couple of hamstring injuries in international break time. I don't know. But I mean, if I think of the case of someone like Kevin De Bruyne, who, okay, he didn't play the other day. He did complain last season that 10 games you feel great, 10 games you feel okay, and then you just feel like shit. And that's you for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Well, that's him now. Mm. That's him. That's going to be him at the start of the season. And he's their key player. So I don't see how that doesn't, you know, affect Manchester City. I mean, okay, if there's any training team who I guess I back to get a player into shape, it's Guardiola's. But
also the strength that they have in depth to maybe cope without Kevin De Bruyne, they do have a really top quality squad as well.
Yeah, I don't think they've got anyone.
I
think you take him out. Mm. It doesn't matter who they put in; they're not as good. Mm. You know, he does so much for them. So, so the fact that he's just, you know, halfway into his first week of preseason now, or at least that's where he should be, and that's really is 3 weeks off, you know, getting into matches, so you start developing match fitness. So what? How many matches is he off? You know, he's miles off. So, and then you've got like the question of accumulated fatigue. I don't know. I suppose they've had the chance to plan what they're going to do about this. Probably they were hoping Belgium got knocked out a bit earlier than they did, instead of going all the way to the very last weekend. But I think it's not as though they're the only team that have this problem. But he is the best player himself, and I guess Kante and Hazard at Chelsea, who you could see being affected by it.
How do you feel like the top six are lining up this season? You could probably last season have made a good prediction as to where the top six were going to finish, and I think it's a little bit more fluid. I mean, I don't see beyond Manchester City for the title, but
yeah, I'm not sure Chelsea to be so bad. I mean, I wouldn't have. If they were the champions, you know, I would have thought they would at least finish in the top four.
Yeah.
But the team that actually surprised me by finishing in the top four were Manchester United. So they finished second, and was it Tottenham and Liverpool in order?
Yeah.
With City, who were clearly the best team at the beginning of the season, winning really easily. So if you're saying it's easy to predict, what's your prediction?
I think City will win it. I think Liverpool will probably come second. After that, I don't quite know, because I think there's so much uncertainty involving Arsenal, involving Tottenham, involving Chelsea, and involving Manchester United. It's difficult to know who's gonna get on top of it. I mean, I like to think that Arsenal probably have made a good start to the summer in terms of the players that they brought in and addressing key issues and bringing in a new coach first and foremost, which is something that we've spoken about before. He's going to require some patience, I think, Unai Emery. I think he's got a big job on his hands to get things back on track. But they seem to be a little bit more ready, or a little bit more organized, even with all the other stuff that's going on, because they've done business early. The thing for Arsenal, whether we can do it between now and tomorrow, is who can we move on? Because it's a big, fat squad, you know? There's players in there that need to go and haven't yet gone. So that's where I think the issue is in that. But in terms of what he's got available to him, maybe Arsenal are in reasonable shape.
It's impossible really to say, because I mean, I remember seeing, I was at the Europa League final when Sevilla beat Liverpool in 2016, and Unai Emery was the Sevilla coach, and I was very impressed by their, by what they did. Like, they were a team that played really good football, but like with a lot of strong guys as well. It wasn't like a kind of very you know, one of these ethereal technical
French
teams. They were like big solid guys who really absolutely destroyed Liverpool in the second half of the game. So I remember thinking, this guy, and obviously they'd won a, this was a couple in a row that they'd won. I mean, this is basically what got him the PSG job, I guess. And then what happened to PSG was not good. I mean, not good. The question with PSG is this, was it not good because, I mean, okay, they won the league.
In his second season.
Yeah. So obviously losing the league first time was not good.
Yeah.
And losing to Barcelona the way they did was particularly terrible. But the second season, when things kind of, I mean, obviously they again won the league, but managed to win the league, but like that's, you know, we know that they're kind of a special case. It's only if they don't win it's a disaster, and if they do it's just normal. So the question is whether bringing Neymar in those sort of circumstances and conditions created an impossible situation for any coach.
Yeah. It's not a normal club in that sense, is it? You know, with Neymar not being accountable, probably not being accountable to Unai Emery. Because if he wanted to, given the stature that he has and how important that transfer was from an optics point of view, he could just go above him to whoever the dude is that makes the decisions. That's a difficult thing to deal with.
Well, Emery, he invited Emery to his birthday party, which he took 2 days off for. Remember, his Neymar's birthday, like his 26th birthday, was in February, and he took that, you know, went on for like, it was like a couple of days sort of extravaganza, and involved him sitting out a cup match, you know.
I don't remember this.
Yeah. It was back in I think Neymar's the 5th of February, so it was around that sort of time, and he invited Emery along to stand there like a prick at this event that shouldn't have been happening but was happening because it's Neymar, and like no other player gets to have a party. Not even Yaya Toure gets to take a match off.
He doesn't even get a cake.
For birthday reasons. You know, I mean, it's, you know, you see Mourinho moaning about Marcel missing preseason training because he's just had a baby.
Yeah.
Like, missing a match, even if it's only a French Cup match.
Because you want to have a birthday party.
Yeah. That's insane. I mean, not even a child wouldn't do that. A child would want to play the match. You know, they'd want to have a birthday party, lots of cake, you know, invite all their friends around and have a really good time. But they'd still want to play the football. But yeah. Neymar, no. So that is a very difficult situation for any manager. I mean, so there was sort of talk coming out of PSG, oh, this guy's weak. This guy, I mean, maybe he's just a realist. Maybe he's just a guy who understands the politics of the situation. He's like, oh, well, I've got a guy who just does what he wants. And he's the main guy in the team.
And he's being indulged by the owners.
He has got the absolute backing of the owners. I know that I'm just here as a kind of a, I'm nobody next to this guy. So there's not even any point in me saying, oh, I think it's a bit of a disgrace, actually, what you're doing there, Neymar. This is nonsense. You can't go taking days off, missing matches to have a birthday. Maybe, okay, is it weakness that he let that happen? Should he have maybe quit? I don't know. I mean, I imagine with the sums of money involved, there was compelling reasons not to quit.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I actually thought, given how badly things had gone and the way he'd been sort of, you know, made a fool of in a way by the whole situation, that he was a very, very lucky boy to get the job at Arsenal. Because I think the manager Arsenal actually wanted is the guy who's now managing PSG, Thomas Tuchel. I think they wanted him, but couldn't get him because Wenger was still the manager. And then, by the time Arsenal were like, okay, the job is definitely going to be free, Tuchel was like, sorry, I've actually already agreed to PSG.
So, I'm not sure about how much interest there was in Tuchel, really. You know, his name was floated about, of course, because he's just one of the obvious candidates to replace him, but I'm not sure if there really was that much interest in him. But yeah, I mean, it was a surprise appointment because everyone was expecting something different.
From Arsenal, basically.
From Arsenal.
Arsenal, yeah, yeah.
Well, everyone was expecting Arteta.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I mean, that was a weird one because you rarely get to that level of, yeah, it's on, you know, everyone, it's done deal.
Yeah.
And then, someone completely different.
Well, I mean, Ivan Gazidis came out at this press conference and said to all the journalists who had been reporting about Arteta for very good reasons, not just that one guy said Arteta and everyone went, oh, Arteta, and we'll just, you know, people from various media outlets were reporting it for good reasons. And Gazidis says to the journalists, you know, those who speak or those who know don't speak and those who speak don't know, speak or whatever it was, you know, which went down, as you would imagine, like a fucking fart in a spacesuit with some of the journalists there. But, you know, it was a bit of a surprise appointment, Emery, but on the face of it, if you look at Arsenal and where they are as a club right now, it's a Europa League club. It seems to be a Europa League club. It has been for the last couple of seasons. He is a very successful Europa League manager, and also young enough perhaps to develop as a manager and bring the club back towards Champions League. I think, you know, I've got concerns and worries about certainly the defensive side of the squad, but given the other clubs involved, given the record last season, and given that it wouldn't take a huge amount to improve Arsenal when you look at the away form last season, I think Arsenal have got a good chance of getting back into the top four this season.
Mm. I mean, the problem is the Europa League.
Yeah?
You know, it's like the Europa League. I mean, okay, it's English clubs have been doing really well in the Europa League recently. I mean, Liverpool lost the final, Manchester United won it.
Mm.
What happened last season? Was there someone?
Arsenal were in the semi-final last season. Yeah.
Lost to Atletico.
Yeah.
So it is a credible way to get into the Champions League. It definitely is for an English team. So they can't just say, okay, under 23 competition, but they kind of need to do that.
Mm. I mean, do you feel like Europa League progress and top four finishes are a little bit
hard to do?
Yeah,
together.
Hard to achieve together.
It can be done, but it is much more difficult. I mean, just look at the evidence of the recent, you know, Chelsea winning the league while not being in Europe, Leicester winning the league. Obviously, they weren't in Europe. Liverpool a couple of seasons before that, doing really well. And it is a huge advantage not to have to play twice as many matches.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not quite twice, but it is. It's like the Europa League.
It stretches
like
the squad.
20-odd games. You know, it's like more than half a season again on top of what you're supposed to. Is that, am I still correct in that? It's a lot. So it seems to me as though at least the first half of it should be a kind of, you know.
Yeah.
If these kids can't get us through, then...
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does feel like that's what he's going to do, what Arsene Wenger did last season, and play fringe and youth players in the Europa League. What have you made of Arsenal's transfer business? Just to sort of put it in, to remind you of it, they brought in Bernd Leno, who's the goalkeeper, Stefan Lichtsteiner, 34-year-old right back, Socratis Papastathopoulos from Borussia Dortmund, Lucas Torreira, the Uruguayan midfielder, and I'm sure there was one more actually, a young midfielder, Matteo Guendouzi. And I feel like I'm forgetting somebody else as well. There might well have been one more signing in there, but you know, on top of what they brought in last season, for example, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan in January. Yeah. I mean, how do you assess the Arsenal squad?
None of the players they've signed are really the type where you'd say, wow, this is a real, this kind of brings the squad up a level. I don't think that's the case. I mean, Lichtsteiner has been a good player for a long time. But as you said, he's 34.
Yeah.
The same thing with Socratis. I mean, what's he? 32?
30.
He's only 30?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he just turned 30 as well, so.
Yeah, I mean, he's a unit. You know, and the I suppose the goalkeeper is maybe the most important, really. I mean, is he going to be a first choice goalkeeper?
I would imagine, you know, if you pay £22.5 million for a goalkeeper, which is a lot of money. Well, it was a lot of money until Liverpool came along. But for Arsenal, you know, it's certainly the most they've ever spent on a goalkeeper. So you'd have to think that that was you know, a purchase made with the idea of him being first choice.
Well, he is German. I remember Jurgen Klopp saying of Karius, well, you know, Germany is a goalkeeper country. So that was when he was affecting confidence in Karius' prospects. I think he's the most important signing, you know, in terms of if you've got a good goalkeeper, it kind of covers a lot. I mean, look at Man United, you know.
Yeah.
So you got to wait and see how he does. I mean, he should in theory be good, but in theory so should Loris Karius.
Yeah, and he's not.
Well,
no. Poor Loris.
It's bad.
Yeah, it is bad. Let's talk a little bit, and I know you don't normally like to talk about Jose Mourinho, but let's talk a little bit about Jose and the way that he has been behaving. I can remember sitting here with you, it must be three summers ago now, before his final season at Chelsea, and he had already started to kick off. I think he'd had a little pop at Wenger in the
Community Shield.
There was all kinds of stuff going on. And it looked like, here we go, third season, Jose Mourinho. Yeah. And it sort of felt like, okay, maybe it's a thing, maybe it's not a thing. But here we are again, going into his third season at Manchester United. You already mentioned his behaviour towards Anthony Martial, who appears not to have taken that very well himself. I mean, is it a case simply that the way he man-manages is completely and utterly redundant in the modern era? Can he instill this kind of fear in players like he likes to? Or is he just so fundamentally a cunt that he can't help himself?
I don't think he can help himself. I think the cat's out of the bag now with Jose. It's a problem for him because all the players see all the same stuff that everybody else does. It's not like he can sort of control what gets through to them about him. Where do you even start? He strikes me as somebody who doesn't want to... He doesn't give the impression of being much interested in what he's doing.
Yeah, doesn't seem to like the job, does he?
No. He strikes me as somebody who doesn't have any confidence that he can do what he's been hired to do, which is beat Manchester City, win the title, you know, win the Champions League, whatever. Mm. I don't think he believes that he can do it. And I think from the way that he goes on, I can only really judge him on what he does in public, the messages that he puts out. They seem to be geared to making sure everyone knows it's somebody else's fault. So some of the players maybe are not in the right shape. Antonio Valencia, maybe he had too much holiday. Maybe Anthony Martial, baby's healthy, why is he not here? Maybe the board, Woodward or whatever, he gave him a list of players. He said the same thing at Chelsea, if you remember, the 3 years ago. I gave them my list in April and still nothing. You know, we've had this similar situation here. A list of players. Now, I'm sure there's going to be somebody signed in the next 48 hours, and there has to be, you assume. But he's been saying, look, I've given them this list, and maybe I'll get one player. Maybe what I want and what I will get are two different things.
So
it's all about pointing the finger. It hasn't even started a game yet. Oh, thank God this preseason is over. I wouldn't pay money to see these teams. You know, just like... It's the only way it makes sense is as an exercise in blame allocation.
So that when things inevitably go wrong,
then there's still some shreds of his tattered reputation that he can use to patch together into some application for his next job.
I mean, is it possible that the fact that he's given them a list and that they haven't provided the players on this list, if you talk about him not having confidence in his ability to do what he's been hired to do, I mean, is it possible that they're not confident in his ability to do what they have hired him to do and aren't willing to invest in what he wants? Because often when you do that, it's like a last throw of the dice. If it doesn't work, then the new manager is going to come in and say, well, I don't want that guy. I don't want this kind of player. I want that kind of player. And maybe they're keeping their powder dry a little.
I think, you know, that with them, you've made your bed, you better lie in it. So buy Jose, Ivan Perisic, buy him, you know, his experienced players. Buy him players on the biggest wages from the biggest clubs who know how to play the game, that he doesn't have to teach, that he can just put in there and do the business. Buy them.
Mm.
Like he bought Matic and like he bought Sanchez, because, you know, you hired him and you knew what he was going to do. Mm. At least you should have known what he was going to do, because this is exactly what he does. And he's done it, you know, the last 10 years. This is what Jose Mourinho has been doing.
Mm.
And if you didn't know this about him, you shouldn't have hired him. So assuming that you're competent, which is maybe a big assumption, but assuming that you are competent, then why aren't you sort of backing Manchester? Why is Perisic not playing for Manchester United?
Yeah.
Oh, he's, you know, 30 years old, he gets paid a lot. Yeah. Like, you've hired Mourinho. These are the types of players that he likes to work with.
Yeah.
You know, the example, well, one thing that I'm a bit puzzled by is that Pogba is still there. I don't really see why Pogba is still, I mean, Pogba is there because the club wants to have a star like Pogba. Pogba is like this absolute phenomenal sort of generator of interest.
Mm.
You know, as a star, he's a much bigger star than he is a football player. Although he's a substantial football player. I mean, he's just won the World Cup, you know, scored in the final. This guy's, I don't mean to diminish him, but I think as a star, he's even bigger. And so from the point of view of the club, it's like, yeah, you know, we've got all Paul's engagements, you know, onside that all sort of factors into our sponsorship deals. I mean, that's what Manchester United is run by guys who are selling advertising. That's what it is. And the reason they hired Mourinho is, here we are talking about him now. I mean, what we talked about Arsenal first, and now we're talking about Mourinho, because whatever about the football, like the whole other aspect of it is interesting. I mean, even if it's like a third season meltdown, you know, which lays waste to the club.
Yeah.
It's still like right up the top of the
entertainment
of the agenda.
Yeah.
It's still, you know, you're I mean, I watched a bit Sunday Supplement the other day. It was the first thing they talked about.
Right.
You know what I mean? So so simply he gives you that sort of primacy, even if it's mainly just people rubbernecking at this train wreck.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure people will think that's an over dramatic way to talk about a club that just finished second last year. But, you know, do you see a big improvement from Manchester United? I don't see where it's going to come from. I don't think it's going to come from Jose. And I don't see where the players, maybe you've got to hope that maybe Rashford develops more. You know, although I haven't seen too much sign of it since Mourinho's been the manager. You know, there's this whole thing. Oh, I play Rashford. Rashford plays more games than anyone. You know, we all know what happened. Rashford sits there. Rashford last season, didn't he sit on the bench pretty much between January and then when he scored the two goals against Liverpool? He didn't start.
Yeah.
So like we all sort of know what's going on. But I do feel as though United should, now they've decided to hire Jose, they need to go along with it. I mean, the when I was talking about Pogba, the example that comes to mind of how Mourinho could turn that Pogba situation to his advantage, because the situation is clearly himself and Pogba don't really have a very good relationship. You do not drop a player like Paul Pogba for Scott McTominay in the Champions League and continue to have a good relationship.
No, you don't.
No, it's just so insulting.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, McTominay. You know, you see how sensitive Mourinho is to any kind of even imagined insult.
Yeah.
If he was sitting there as, you know, Paul Pogba and McTominay is playing again in the Champions League, this in the biggest match of the season.
Mm.
No. So I think that Mourinho would delightedly have sold Pogba and done what he did with Zlatan at Inter. I mean, he loved Zlatan, and Zlatan was a good player for him, but Zlatan went to Barcelona, and Mourinho went, okay, get me Eto'o, get me Pandev, you know, who I can't remember all the guys they brought in.
Mm.
Did they bring in Snyder that year? Was he the year before?
Can't remember.
He basically turned Zlatan into four or five. Diego Milito, he was one of them, I think.
Yeah.
Four or five kind of the type of players he likes, you know, the 29, 30, 31 year old players.
Who will just do what he wants and work hard. And
who will do it, who who he understands, who he can fit into a kind of. I loved watching his World Cup stuff, or rather reading. I didn't actually get to see any of them. But reading the stuff that he was saying, it was hilarious. It was like, here's Mourinho giving a Man United press conference in the form of supposed World Cup punditry, where he talks about how great Pogba is because he's defending and not kind of venturing much past the halfway line and not getting ahead of the ball and not, you know, all this kind of stuff. And Perisic, how amazing Perisic is. Look at his qualities. Look at his physicality. Look at the physicality of Perisic. Like when Perisic headed the ball back to Mandzukic against England. Mm. That was like Mourinho's moment of the tournament. Because if you look at Perisic, you know, he's tenacious, he's determined, he gets stuck in, he digs out across. When that comes back, he digs out the header. This is what you want from the left. This is what you want. What you don't want is Martial. You know, you don't want Martial. This is Martial.
Yeah.
Sure, he might like be lightning fast with the ball at his feet, you know, moving the ball from one foot to the other, you know, smooth, elegant, beautiful, all that. But like, would he have won that header? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. So I do kind of feel, yes, there is a case that United should have been backing him more. Like, they have done it. They've signed Matic, they've signed Sanchez. That's their Mourinho signings. These are not the type of players they used to sign. Mm. They used to not sign players of that age on that wages. They just never did it. Ferguson with Van Persie is the one exception.
Yeah.
But if you look at the previous few years, very, very, very rare for them to do that. And here they are. So I don't know why they stopped doing it. Maybe they will over the next couple of days. But do I expect, even if they did sign Perisic, for it to...
Yeah, I mean, it's a really difficult message, isn't it, to send at the start of a season. If you're complaining about your squad, if you're complaining about not being backed, if you're complaining about the players that you have, I know it's only a preseason tour, but to say to however many people were at that game in the States,
100,000
people, because Man United and Liverpool, of course, hugely well-supported clubs, but to say, I wouldn't pay to come and see this, you know, it's kind of insulting to those fans as well, who go and look at those team lineups and understand that this is not the cream of the Manchester United crop, but... You know, could it be a case that, look, we've got some really talented young players here on this tour, we want to give them a chance, you know, even just to create that kind of illusion, if you like. Mm. But to sort of talk your team down in that way before the start of a season, it can only be counterproductive.
Well, it depends on what you are aiming to produce.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're aiming to produce a feel-good vibe around the club, and a sense of optimism in the supporters and the players, then yes, it is counterproductive. But if you're aiming to produce pressure on Ed Woodward to sign somebody you want, or if you're aiming to produce among the supporters the impression that this is all somebody else's fault, then it's not counterproductive.
Right.
Because if Jose Mourinho had been there saying, we've got amazing young players, you know, they disgraced themselves in the little league the other year, because he said that as well. Oh, they finished bottom of the league or whatever, didn't he, about the under 23s.
Oh, did he say that?
Yeah, he said.
Oh my gosh.
Even though the reason for this was that they picked a lot of like younger players in order that they could be playing against kind of older players,
right.
So they weren't expecting to win. You know, this was like it was kind of a policy to try and
harden up these young talents.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they didn't win the league, so and so Jose uses it as a way to. Now, if he'd come out and said, all our young players are great, I'm delighted with what's happening in the academy, I've got so many there, it's like 11 new signings. then suddenly, you know, a few weeks into the season, if things aren't going well, people are like, well, what about, you know, where's Twanzabe? You know, what about these brilliant young players you were bigging up over in Michigan? Why aren't we seeing any of these? And so you've made a rod for your own back. You know, so I think it produced what he wanted it to produce. The players, you know, their careers, I guess, maybe collateral damage, you know, but
that's all.
Not all careers are equal. So.
Yeah, very true.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
What about Liverpool, who've made some very good signings? I think Jurgen Klopp, and you know, even if the Champions League final ended in a disappointing way, there does seem to be a... I mean, it's, you know, he's really good at losing finals, Klopp. Yeah. But even aside from that, there seems to be a really good atmosphere around Liverpool among the supporters, about the prospects of the club, maybe not necessarily ready to challenge Manchester City or to bridge that gap to Manchester City, but certainly a sense that they're going in the right direction.
I think they should be ready. I do. I mean, maybe I sound a bit like Jose Mourinho now, because that's been a running commentary of his. You know, you have to expect them. Look, you know, they're buying absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
You have to expect them to. But I look at the teams now, and I think, well, why not? You know, why should they have the attitude that you know they're still miles behind Man City? I'm not sure that they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go through the teams, I think there's quite a few Liverpool players who would play for Manchester City. Probably vice versa is true as well, but I don't really see a huge gap. I mean, when you look at the teams, it seems to me that the advantage, the area where City are furthest ahead, is the midfield line, the third line of the team with De Bruyne and David Silva.
Mm.
And I don't think Liverpool are at that level in that area of the field. I mean, they don't have a midfielder on the Bruyne level, although they're waiting to see if Keita is going to be as good in the Premier League as he was in the Bundesliga. But he'd still have to improve to be as good as De Bruyne. You know, they've got good players, but I don't think they've got quite that sort of... what we saw from De Bruyne and Silva last season was amazing, you know.
Mm.
And you would expect, why shouldn't they... I mean, we mentioned some of the concerns.
Fatigue.
With De Bruyne, exactly.
And Silva getting a bit older.
Yeah, although I don't think he's... I kind of think with Silva, he seems very fit to me. He is a kind of another player who... He plays in short distances, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's not like a guy who needs to be everywhere on the field. You know? He sort of is like, you know, 5 yards this way, 5 yards that way. I don't see why he should be slowing down remotely yet. And they've got the sort of system of play. Like, those guys are, they just know exactly how to find a player in space, and then that player knows exactly who's going to be in the box and which directions they're going to be attacking from. You know, they were so much better than everybody last season, broke the points record and so on. So they should still be the favourites. But you look at Liverpool and you think, well, why shouldn't they also win most of their matches? You know, I don't really see... Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that there's this sort of feeling of optimism in Liverpool now has to do also with the way that, say, Virgil van Dijk joined Liverpool instead of Manchester City, or, you know, Alisson ends up actually joining Liverpool instead of, you know, going to Real Madrid. You know, these types of... So it seems as though, okay, even though they sold Coutinho 8 months ago, maybe he'll be the last one for a while to do that. you know, Salah, I think, signed a new contract. Firmino signed a new contract.
Yeah.
So the players, guys who were doing well for them, aren't immediately going, well, you know, now that I've caught your attention, you know, come and get me. You know, which sort of has been what's happened whenever anyone's played well for Liverpool in the last 10 years. It's almost like, well, I've earned my freedom from this place now. so someone can, kind of big club now sign me. Whereas they now seem to have reached the point where players are signing up with them for, you know, if you look at the age of their squad as well, it's all very good. Guys who could potentially play together for 3 or 4 years,
yeah.
You know, not that it, you know, often works out that way.
Yeah.
But it does look that way at the moment. So we have to see Van Dijk as well was just an immense improvement to the team. And now that they've got a goalkeeper who's supposed to be very good as well.
Yeah. I mean, is that your 1 and 2 for the season?
Well, that is definitely how it looks at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you always have to remember Richard Keys saying, you know, early shout, Everton, finish above Liverpool. You know, he said this.
He's always a couple of seasons ago, wasn't he?
That was last season.
Was it with Ronald Koeman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd done such impressive transfer business by signing Wayne Rooney, Sigurdsson, Davy Klaassen,
yeah,
and a bunch of other players who like to play in the same tiny area of the field. But like, everything is sort of looking good. You're kind of waiting for something to go wrong now.
Mm.
You know, it's like, well, how's this all going to fall apart? Because this is the best team I think they've had in the Premier League era, certainly.
Mm.
You know, if you think back to the previous, I mean, the 2014 team, nobody was expecting to really do anything that season.
Yeah.
In 2009, they finished second, and they were one of the strongest teams that year, but they also had obvious weaknesses.
Yeah.
As Ferguson, I think, said, oh, the trust of their team is all about Gerrard and Torres. And that was true. You know, two really good players, but, like, you know, it's like Dirk Kuyt, Albert Riera.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the quality wasn't even throughout the team, whereas now I think they're getting to a point where in almost every position you've got one of the top players in the league. So if you've got that, then why not win the league?
Mm. Well, it's a big task, to get beyond City.
City have to do it. I mean, you know, it's like Guardiola said last season when they were kind of getting the 17 wins in a row. We're way out in front of like sort of, yeah, the last record points total. I was like, well, I've been in this situation before, basically with, you know, Bayern and Barcelona or whatever, and I can tell you that next season it's all going to be about, oh, City are way behind where they were. City are deteriorating. They're on the way down. You know, if we don't keep it, because in order to keep pace with themselves, they've got to win, I think, 18 out of their first 19 matches or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I mean, surely teams are going to have some better ideas about how to play against them than last season. You know, surely there's got to be a little bit of the league adapting to them as well.
Yeah.
So it does seem likely that they will be behind where they were, that they'll be kind of,
sure,
at this point last season, and which will look really bad if, for instance, they have like a normal sort of 3-game spell where they play badly and get 2 draws and a defeat.
Yeah, of course.
So he said that's going to happen. Like, I know, they're saying, oh, how proud are you? You must be delighted to have so many points and goals and records. And he's saying, I know, the only significance of this is that it makes it harder for us next season because everyone's going to be moaning about it. However, I know that it's all bullshit. So, you know, your question is bullshit. The points total and tally is bullshit. And next season, when you're all going on about this, that's going to be bullshit as well.
Yeah. What about Tottenham and Chelsea? Obviously, Chelsea have changed managers. They did it in a very strange way. You know, they reported back for pre-season training with Antonio Conte and then brought Sarri in. That must have been really awkward, I'd say, for Conte and the players. And there's the Abramovich side of things as well, isn't there? Because he's no longer in the UK. He's now resident in Israel. I'm not sure if that means his connection to London is completely gone, whether he can fly in and out for games
he can
whatever.
He's welcome to I think he can pretty much be in the UK as much as he likes. The question, though, would be more to do with, well, if I'm investing billions, you know, billions into this city, you know, why should I do that if apparently I'm persona non grata now? That's not how things used to be. And I mean, the significant thing with Chelsea was saying, oh, well, our stadium isn't going to happen now. Thank you very much for that. So they've shelved the whole stadium plan, which was a massive redevelopment.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a couple of weeks after Abramovich, after it was in May, I think it was reported that he was taking Israeli citizenship. This was only a couple of weeks after it had been reported that the Foreign Office were not
renewing his visa.
Or we're kind of like, oh, you know, we'll be taking a closer look at this visa application now. We've just been kind of signing them with a stamp until now. And now it's like, he obviously didn't like that. And then the stadium thing is cancelled. So I think, well, cancelled, you know, put in cold storage could potentially be revived. Maybe it's leverage in some other negotiation. Who knows? Maybe it's just never going to happen. I mean, as for what happened with Conte, that shows you the fact that he was still there at the start of the season is to do with the dispute over the terms of his sacking. You know, he's like, well,
yeah,
I'm not going for that. You know, you're going to have to do a bit better than that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And evidently he felt quite strongly about it personally, because a lot of the time managers would just say,
fuck this.
Exactly. Yeah. Just get out of here and move on with my life sort of thing. But it clearly wasn't like that. You know, and then so they hire Sarri. I don't think they've made it very easy for him with the Conte situation. Mm. Ideally, he would have been earlier, because he's got like a... similar to Guardiola, like a whole way of playing that he wants to teach the squad, and it's radically different from anything they've ever done before at Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea have only made one effort, as far as I can see, to move away from the basic template that Mourinho laid down in 2004, which was signing Villas-Boas.
I'm playing that High line.
Yeah. I still remember John Terry scrambling around after Robin van Persie.
Oh, I mean, do too.
Yeah, you don't want Robin van Persie, you know, streaking past you like a hare, you know, into 40 yards of open space. Something's gone badly wrong if that's happening.
I want that. Well, I did want that kind of thing to happen. What about Tottenham? They haven't signed anyone yet, which is quite weird. The new stadium is not ready. They're going to play their first games at Wembley. The one player they appear to be trying to get is Jack Grealish from Aston Villa, you know, who's a decent player, but I'm not sure will make a huge impact on the top four or at top four level. I mean, it's hard to look beyond the fact that the stadium is taking a bite out of what the club is willing to spend.
Well, it must be. I mean, that's Pochettino, I think, was talking about just the other day, saying you can't compare us to other teams who are spending on their team. We're spending on our stadium, which supposedly sort of spirals, the cost of it spiraled.
Yeah.
You sort of, you know, when something kind of increases in price by like £500 million, you do end up looking at it thinking, is this, on what basis does this still make sense?
You know
what
I mean?
It's like £500 million is quite a lot.
I never quite understood what they were trying to do with, you know, building a 60,000-seater stadium.
Tottenham.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it from the point of view that I guess the plan was to build the club to the point where it was a Champions League club, build a new stadium, make it a very valuable-looking asset for somebody to come along and then say, yes, I will spend X amount of money on this. But when you factor in the cost of the stadium... Yeah. And the impact that might then have on the team, I think, you know, it might go underappreciated how Arsene Wenger kept Arsenal in the top four while moving to a new stadium, using players that, when you look back on them now, perhaps weren't as good as people thought at the time. Yeah. And people didn't think some of those players were that good at the time either. Mm. And then the challenge of staying competitive and also hanging on to the best players that they have, in particular Harry Kane, who could become the new Matt Letizia in a way, you know, loyal to the club that he plays for, but passing up the opportunity to actually achieve things in his career because he hasn't moved on.
World Cup Golden Boot is enough here.
Yeah.
Well, Matt Letizia didn't have the level of recognition that Harry Kane at least enjoys. Like, he has, you know, I don't think playing for Spurs has held him back in the sense of people saying Harry Kane is the best English striker, for instance.
Sure.
Whereas Matt Letizia was the best English attacking midfielder who played for Southampton, and nobody was interested.
If he played for
Manchester United, everyone would like Matt Letizia, English Cantona.
Of course, but like, you know, was it to do with the media side of things as well back then, the coverage of the game and what have you, that didn't necessarily get Letizia the recognition that he deserved? But
I mean, the problem Tottenham are going to have has been coming down the line for a while, and it is it's the gap between what their players earn and players of comparable or lesser ability earn elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, they all, I'm sure, have had the chance to find out how much Kyle Walker is making now in Manchester City. That's Premier League champion Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
And how he's really moved on with his life, you know, and Spurs was great, and it, you know, he'll always cherish those times. But, you know, you can't hang around in the sort of playground forever. You know, it's not, you know, at some point you must grow up and put away childish things, treble your income and win the Premier League, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's all the agents, because like Harry Kane, for instance, is like, he always seems to be like, I want to stay with Tottenham. It's like the opposite of, did Van Persie at any point ever say, oh, I think it would be better to win the trophies with Arsenal, before he reneged and turned around. I mean, this whole little boy thing that Van Persie came out with, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, in hindsight, Van Persie could have won the Premier League if he'd stayed at Arsenal. You know, that could have happened.
In
2014.
I think it's more likely that it could have happened with Arsenal than it's going to happen for Harry Kane with Tottenham.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't, certainly if you're Kane, you're looking at it now and thinking, okay, nobody really has come in.
Mm.
I mean, I think Grealish is actually a very good player.
Mm.
Grealish could be an excellent signing, but it's not like they've done what Liverpool have done. You know, Liverpool have gone, okay, here, you know, we've improved our midfield, we've improved our defence, we've improved our goalkeeper, we've got like an extra option in attack. Okay, I mean, you can't really do more than that. Tottenham, none of that. All the agents, remember how much agents make from players moving clubs as well.
Yeah.
Harry Kane's always said, no, you know, I want to stay with Tottenham. And I really like that attitude. I think it's much better to have players think that, to even if it's like delusional optimism, I can do it here. But, you know, because it's a very ambitious thing to say, to think that I can win the Premier League for Tottenham. I can sort of do what Alan Shearer did for Blackburn. It's kind of that level of ambition. And it's a more difficult road than to go, all right, well, now that I've established myself as like the top English striker, do I join Manchester United or do I join Manchester City or maybe, you know, it's not like... That's kind of been the traditional thing that players normally do.
Mm.
So I like the fact that Kane's is different, but I do wonder how long it's going to be. Because while he can sort of say, "Look, this is what I want to do, and this is just the way I want to do things," and I believe that we can do it at Tottenham, he might think that himself, and that could be a very strong conviction. If tested one way, that is in the face of repeated Tottenham frustrations, but if tested another way, it could actually suddenly prove quite vulnerable. I think it's vulnerable in the sense that if it ever gets into Harry Kane's head that he's carrying Daniel Levy's business operation on his back, that he's being exploited, that he's being underpaid, you know, underrewarded, in order to help Tottenham's board fatten up the club for sale.
Yeah.
Like, so they're drawing his life essence, right?
they're suckling like, from the teat of Harry Kane.
Yeah, he's like Boxer in Animal Farm, or, you know, the Oscar Wilde story about the nightingale. You know, he's like making the white rose red with his heart's blood.
Sure.
You know? And And then all they're going to do after that is throw him away on the rubbish heap or send him off to the glue factory because, like, he served his purpose. Now, that's the kind of thing that really would start to play on someone's mind, you know? And that's exactly what all the agents would be saying. Harry, you know, Harry,
you've only got one career.
You're getting ridden rock solid here, Harry. You're getting ridden. You know, these guys, I can't believe, you know, I just can't believe you put up with being treated that way, Harry.
Yeah.
You know? The combination of that and the knowledge that you could make three times as much money somewhere else and probably win more stuff.
Yeah.
It's if you think you're taken advantage of. Like, the bond between the Tottenham brothers could last. Like, it's there's nothing stronger in the world than, you know, all for one and one for all. Until someone gets the idea that they're getting cheated.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with Alderweireld. He's like, I'm being cheated here. I should be getting paid a lot more. I'm running out of time to become the incredibly wealthy man I've always dreamed of being.
Danny Rose as well. He went very public about it, didn't he?
Yeah, but you know, you can sort of see their point. Like,
yeah.
They're among the best players in their position in the league. Why shouldn't they?
Mm.
You know, why shouldn't they? And there's and then the problem that Levy has, in my opinion, the last accounts showed that he was the best paid person at the club.
Yeah, we're earning like £6.5 million or something.
Way more than any other director in his position. Now, you can make arguments as to why that is. You know, well, there's back pay involved and certain bonuses, you know, targets were met and so on and so forth. But it comes down to a headline fact that you're the best paid man at this club.
Mm.
The guy in the suit.
Yeah.
Well, who's the real Galactico here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's, I think, corrosive to the team spirit that Tottenham need. They could pull this thing off, but that is just corrosive. Once people start to think, hang on, I'm doing more than my share and I'm not getting, you know, it could blow up very quickly. And there's a few players, I think, who were in that position. So they've kept a lid on it really well so far, but, you know, just the richer Kyle Walker gets, the harder it must become.
Yeah, and the more he wins. Couple of quick things very finally. Do you see anybody as a surprise package? Anybody from outside last season's top six making an inroad into that half of the table, that area of the table? Is there a team you think that could make that breakthrough? I mean, what about Everton? I was thinking
Everton. I mean, Marco Silva just had such a weird career.
Yeah, it's
in the Premier League. At this point, but he has had at least a couple of months at both Hull and at Watford where it looked as though he really knew what he was about.
Mm.
You'd have to imagine that they'll improve from last season.
Mm.
But as to whether, I mean, I think the big thing Everton are waiting for is to see what's going to happen now with Usmanov. Is he going to...
I think he said yesterday, well, he certainly said to David Kahn of The Guardian that he wasn't going to reinvest in Everton, but his former business partner, Moshiri, is 49.9% owner there. I would be kind of surprised if he didn't, but of course there are the various factors. You got to wonder why it was he sold up at Arsenal. Was it because he just had enough? You know, Kroenke had waited him out long enough. Whether it is to do with the climate involving Russian businessmen in the UK, whether it's to do with just taking a profit and that's it, or whether he does want to reinvest in another club. There was talk about him actually investing in AC Milan a couple of months ago as well. So I don't think that's the case now that they've got this this hedge fund out there. But it would be a kind of a surprise to me if he didn't, having been so impotent at Arsenal, to have sat there for 6 or 7 or 8 years, whatever it is, and having 30% of the club and having no representation and not being on the board and, you know, being the second biggest shareholder at a big club like Arsenal. It must be kind of emasculating for a guy who normally gets what he wants whenever he wants.
How much money did he clear on this Arsenal transaction?
A few hundred million, I think. Yeah. You know, because it was, I think he bought in at 12 or 14,000, something like that. And you know, the offer from Kroenke was 29,500 per share. You know,
wouldn't say he feels too emasculated.
No, probably not. But I just mean I don't think it's a financial thing. I think it's just, you know, why do these guys get involved in football clubs? You know, it's not because Usmanov loved Arsenal. It's not because Stan Kroenke loved Arsenal. They get involved because, A, it's business to an extent, but I think there's a certain element of ego and stature and
wanting to get attention. And
Exactly. You know, and if you're just sitting there fucking in the corner, it's like being at a party and like everybody's having a good time over there and you're just sitting outside the door and you're not allowed in.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I own fucking 30% of this fucking party. No, still can't come in because I own more than you and you can't. So, you know, to just sort of slink away into nothingness from a footballing point of view would surprise me. So I wouldn't be at all shocked if... Yeah, I mean, because he sponsored the training ground and everything, which was a weird thing. You know, one of his companies sponsored the Everton training ground. So I feel like the links are there. It would be easy for him to rock up, you know. And I think, you know, when a billionaire says, no, I'm not doing this, I don't necessarily believe him.
Yeah.
You know, he said he wasn't going to sell his Arsenal shares, and he did.
There he goes, yeah.
Yeah.
You know... That could, I mean, he's one of the richest men in the world. It could really change things for Everton. But, you know, okay, it's probably not going to affect the season. But you do look at them and think, all right, they have got some... I mean, Richarlison was very good for Watford when Marco Silva was the manager.
Yeah. That's a lot of money, wasn't it, for that? Or is it these days? It's hard to tell.
It's like, everything just seems to have multiplied so... I mean, if Richarlison was transferred between two Premier League clubs in 1998 for $5 million, would you think that was outrageous?
In 1998?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Still a touch on the high side. More still of a 3.5 million player.
Yeah. You know, I mean, what did he get? 11 goals or 12 goals? I don't know what, you know.
Yeah, nothing really in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
So it was really on the strength of a half season that they bought him, but... I mean, the manager does know him. I mean, maybe West Ham? I don't know. I mean, can West Ham? No, West Ham are structurally...
Is it too dysfunctional from the top down?
Why am I expecting West Ham, you know, under Manuel Pellegrini to suddenly be much better?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's Wolves are the kind of wild card.
They are, aren't they? Yeah.
I mean, because...
George Mendes's Wolves.
What's happening here, you know, so... How good are these guys going to be remains to be seen. So, there's a few. There's nobody really who you can say, I believe this team have a good chance of getting into the top four. No, that still hasn't happened.
Right.
I mean, you wouldn't have said it before Leicester won the league either, but...
True.
So I guess it could happen. But
well, hopefully. Well, maybe we'll get a surprise. So just finally, give me your top four predictions. Putting you on the spot slightly, but
I'll go Man City, Liverpool. Then it gets really difficult.
It does, doesn't it? Because it's so.
I mean, if
up in the air at all of them.
You know, Manchester United. I don't expect to be good, but they did finish second, and they've. You know,
they didn't feel good last season either.
If they were to sort of chug on the same way they did last season, then they should finish in the top four, but. Mm. You sort of think, are they going to, is that going to happen? It could take a nosedive. Then it could actually improve. Mm. I mean, the nosedive is required. Arsenal, you don't know how they're going to be. Chelsea, you've no idea how they're going to be. I mean, at least it looks like Hazard is still going to be playing for them. Primarily, I think, because he hasn't been good enough to win the move that he wants.
Yeah.
You know? It's like he's in a position of never having quite played well enough to convince Real Madrid or Barcelona or any of the type of clubs that he might want to play for that he's worth the money that they would have to pay.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's in a good situation now, which is that he's got a manager who previously converted a similar type of player, but not as good as him, Dries Mertens, into a 30-goal-a-season wonder player.
Yeah, yeah.
And... 2 years left in his contract, such that if he does manage to have a 30-goal wonder season, he'd be cheap for whoever wants to sign him next summer. So I don't know. I don't know if it's enough for me to think that Chelsea... And Chelsea have got also Kante. You know, Jorginho David Luiz is now playing for them again. I don't know who their goalkeeper is going to be yet.
They're after some guy from Athletic Bilbao, is it?
Yeah, Kepa. So he's... a young goalkeeper. I mean, he was in the Spanish World Cup squad.
But they were talking, what, 80 million?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
It's bonkers. But so it's guesswork, really, between positions 3 and 4, isn't it?
I mean, going on the squads, you'd have to favour Manchester United and Chelsea ahead of Arsenal and Tottenham, I think.
Right.
I mean, Tottenham did finish third last season.
Mm.
And it's not said the squad has really changed, but maybe they needed to change a bit more than they have in order to keep the impression of forward momentum. Because last season was the first time it hadn't been as good as the season before.
Yeah.
Since they've had Pochettino there, you know. So you don't want that sense of, oh, this, we're not really going anywhere. Although, you know, the stadium is surely going to make... You never know with the stadium either. It's like, oh, we've moved to our new stadium and everyone hates it. It's got no atmosphere and it doesn't feel like home.
Well, I mean, Wenger said that about the Emirates. He said it takes like a couple of seasons to just to get used to playing there, because they're like at Highbury, whether it's conscious or subconscious, you have the sight lines and you know where you are in the pitch, and you know, you get used to your surroundings. Your peripheral vision takes a while to get used to to a new stadium. So,
well, you know, couldn't be. It must be better than Wembley, surely. So.
Sure.
And they did okay at Wembley.
Yeah.
So I'll go on the basis of squads, Manchester United and Chelsea in the top four ahead of Arsenal and Tottenham.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We better leave it there, because we have been talking for a while and you probably have things to do today. So we'll catch up during the season, I hope. And thanks for being here as always.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much indeed to Ken Early. You can find him on the always excellent Second Captains podcast. You'll get that in your favourite podcasting app. Or for more details, check out secondcaptains.com. Follow Ken on Twitter as well. He is at Ken Early's. This is the first of two preseason podcasts here on Arseblog. And by the time you finish listening to this one, there will be another one. It's a more Arsenal-centric preview of the new season, looking at where we are, what we've done this summer, how ready we are for the new season, all the hopes and dreams and optimism, as well as the fears and concerns that we might have as well. So that's ready for you to download and listen to get some more Arsecast goodness in your ears before this new season begins. As ever, thank you very much indeed for listening. Really appreciate it. Catch you on the next one, which I've just told you about. So go listen to that, will you? Thanks. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.